Are you nostalgic for the past? Many of us romanticize the good old days and have a fondness for the way things used to be. But nostalgia isn't just a personal feeling. It also plays a role in our culture and politics as well. Here with a broad view of the role the past plays in our present is Tobias Becker, author of the new book, Yesterday, A New History of Nostalgia. Tobias is an independent scholar based in Berlin who's published widely on late 19th and early 20th century cultural, intellectual, and urban history. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
Hello, this is Tobias Becker. I'm a historian based in Germany, specializing in modern cultural and intellectual history. I've written a book on the history of nostalgia that has just come out with Harvard University Press this December, and I want to share some of its insights with you. So the first insight or question for a history of nostalgia is, of course, when does such a history start? In contrast to many other terms, we can date nostalgia pretty specifically, or very specifically, to the year 1688. In that year, a physician called Johannes Hofer published a treatise on nostalgia. He invented the term. He was the first to use it in this treatise. But he meant something very different from what we mean when we use the term nostalgia today. He cobbled together the Greek words nostos, return, and algos, pain, and this already implies that what he was writing about was homesickness. He translated the German term Heimweh, homesickness, to the ancient Greek language to produce a medical term denoting a longing for a place, home, which he saw as a pretty dangerous sickness of which people at the time could even die. He diagnosed it mainly in soldiers and other people who were moving around in the early modern period, which opposed today wasn't normal at that time. So for a long time, since 1688, up to the late 19th, early 20th century, nostalgia was a medical term denoting a sickness that we know much better today as homesickness. And of course, we don't believe anymore that people died from it. So this directly turns us to the second question. When did nostalgia lose its spatial connotation for home, and when did it acquire its current connotation for sentimental yearning for the past? I guess this is the most basic definition on which most of the people writing about nostalgia could agree. It's not quite clear when that happened. So we find first instances when it comes to the English language around the 1900s, but it's not before the 1960s that dictionaries register that the meaning of the term has changed and that they add a new definition, yearning for the past, to the old definition, homesickness. So that's why I begin my history of nostalgia in the 1960s, because I'm mainly interested in how we use nostalgia today. So no longer homesickness, but a yearning for the past. The third insight or question could be, why does this happen in the 1960s and more specifically in the 1970s when people started to write and to think about nostalgia in the current meaning much more? So I connect this discourse on nostalgia that begins at this time with a waning idea or with a more problematic idea of progress. So, firstly, what we find in the 1970s specifically is, at least in the eyes of many contemporaries, a turn to the past. For instance, there was a huge rock and roll revival, one of the first really big revivals. 1950s rock and roll and the fashions of the time, films about that era, and so on. So this, for many intellectuals, posed the question, why is this happening? And why are young people specifically nostalgic? Because these revivals, as they are still today, are mostly associated with young people. So why would young people turn to the past and to the youth culture of their parents instead of creating a new one? Well, we find instances for this already in the 1960s. Think of the folk revival and so on, the return of Art Nouveau, Art Deco, and so on. But nobody really cared about this so much in the 1960s because there was a perception of that time itself as progressive. In the 1970s, everything seemed to turn to the past, not only pop culture, but culture itself, society, and so on. And this posed a question: why did this happen? Why did this happen at this era? And one of the first to try to explain this was the sociologist Fred Davis, who wrote a book on one of the first, really, studies of nostalgia, published in 1979, Yearning for the Past. And this was an attempt to explain what was going on. For Fred Davis, as for many people still today, thinking about nostalgia, nostalgia was a reaction to fundamental change. In this case, the fundamental changes, cultural, social, political, of the 1960s. So many people felt disorientated by these changes, he thought, and so they turned to the past. More specifically, they turned to the decade before these changes begin, to the 1950s, which retrospectively looked like a more stable period. And this has become something of a standard theory of nostalgia. Although, looking across the second half of the 20th century and up to today, there is basically no era, no moment when people did not see a wave of nostalgia. This is a term that also arose in the 1970s and that we still frequently use today. So what has this to do with progress, or the idea or the belief in progress? Against the historical background of the 20th century, with all its catastrophes, two world wars, Hiroshima, the Holocaust, and the fear of the destruction of the Earth, whether through nuclear war or through the depletion of resources and the destruction of the environment, the idea of progress was no longer tenable. But on the other hand, we still seem to use or to need the idea of progress very much. I mean, no political party can do without it. You have to promise people something. So intellectuals who wanted to hold on to the idea of progress instead of defending it, which would have been very difficult in the eyes of the costs of progress, turned to slacking off those people who in their eyes were obsessed with the past, and slacking off the obsession with the past more generally. So the term nostalgia, this old medical term that has lost its use and its meaning, was just the right term for them to use at the era, at this time, to characterize what was going on and to criticize it. So the fourth point I would want to make, or I'm making in the book, is about the politics of nostalgia. This is a term that has in recent years been very popular in the media as well as in intellectual discourse and political analysis to explain mostly phenomena like Trump, Brexit, and right-wing populism more generally. But the term, the politics of nostalgia, is much older than it may seem. We find it in the 1950s already, so even before the time that nostalgia became a big thing in other areas. And at this time already, it was a way to criticize what was called new conservatism then. So the return of conservatism, or the really first conservative movement in the United States. And so liberals mainly used it against conservatives, but the conservatives also used it in their infighting between different factions. I mean, it's natural to associate conservatism or conservative with nostalgia. Both seem to be looking to the past. But firstly, we also find it in use against liberal or left-wing parties. And of course, all political camps are looking to the past for ideas or to legitimize their politics. I found in my analysis of how the term is used in politics that it usually is not used in any neutral or analytical sense, but it's mainly used as an insult, a post against someone else, accusing them of holding anachronistic ideas and attitudes and of being unable to navigate the present and the future. So, and because of this background, as a political insult, I think nostalgia is not really a viable term to use use in the analysis of politics, added to which I think that it's too ambivalent and vague. I mean, sometimes or even often it is used to imply other attitudes, racism, for example, xenophobia, misogynistic ideas, and so on. And then these people are said to be nostalgic for the 1950s or something like that. So I think that's much too weak. If that's the attitudes and ideas they're holding, we need to use these much more well-defined and correct terms that really capture what's going on, and not like a soft term like nostalgia. So I think the term is not really useful when it comes to the analysis of politics. My fifth and final point is again about pop culture and about the relationship between retro and nostalgia. Often nostalgia is used to explain why pop culture is looking to the past, why it is recycling, reviving, remaking so many old films, musical styles, fashion styles, and so on. So it's implied that people are yearning for the past, and that's why pop culture is turning to the past, yeah, as a manifestation of this yearning or as a commercial exploitation of these yearnings. No doubt, nostalgia does play a big role in popular culture. I mean, everybody has probably experienced the sense of when an old song is coming on the radio and you specifically remember when you've heard it the last time and you remember this moment, and there's this mixture of yearning but also of distance and pain, an aspect in nostalgia that gets often forgotten. So yes, nostalgia does play a role in pop culture, of course. But I don't think it explains what is going on more generally, because what pop culture does is in effect not so different from what culture has always done, and that is looking to the past for inspiration, for orientation. And often it does this not in a sentimental mode, but in an ironic one. And usually it does not respect the past in that sense or think about the past at all, but it takes what it needs, certain artifacts, certain styles, certain ideas, but it turns them into something new, into a new culture. And this is, as I said, how culture had always worked. High culture, this is completely okay. Yeah, it is called by terms like intertextuality, intermediality, and it's celebrated, yeah, when you can distinguish, well, where's this trend coming from, or this style, this idea, is it going back to Shakespeare and so on, then it is important and good. But when it comes to pop culture, we still seem to be under a under an idea of progress that it needs to kill off the past to produce something new, to produce new culture. We seem still, or certain critics seem still to expect this from pop culture, and so they criticize it as nostalgia. So I think the term retro is much more useful because it's more neutral. It's not implying that pop culture is running out of ideas, but it can be a way of celebrating how it uses and reuses the past in a creative mode. So here again, the term nostalgia is not unproblematic, and I think is too simple to describe something that is much more complex and interesting when you look closer at it. And too often nostalgia, whether it comes to politics or pop culture or other areas, is used to close the debate instead of starting an investigation and looking at these different phenomena and practices more closely. And that's what I've tried to show in my book. Thank you.
Thank you, Tobias. That was Tobias Becker with five big ideas from Yesterday, A New History of Nostalgia. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.